Welcome to Out of the Sun Podcast. I'm Ailea.
And I'm Irene. Grab a cup of coffee and your comfiest sweats and join us every Monday as two best friends discuss everything from raising free-range gremlins to business and really everything under the sun.
Let's get started and thanks for being here. See, you're mimicking the energy, which is what I love about you. But then also I'm like, is it because you feel that way or is it because you know my personality?
I feel that way.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Do people that know you ask you that a lot? Like, wait, are you being really you or are you?
I'm just me. If they ask, it's because I'm not being me.
Right.
Okay. I am so excited.
Me too.
For this conversation. I've actually dreamt about this for a long time, having more conversations, in-depth conversations about this particular topic. But today, Dean, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience? Tell them who you are, what you're about, what you do in a quick
little
summary.
Yeah. So I'm Dean Hefta. And from a business standpoint, I have a consulting company. So I work with companies, with the leadership teams and with new leaders, helping them become more effective and more successful in what they're doing with their teams. And I do communication training and coaching. And so I think that's what we're going to talk about today.
Hooray.
Yay. So I just want to back up and give a little context on how we know you, which I think is important because many, many years ago, like 7 years ago, I applied for a job as a worship leader at a Lutheran church, and I'm not Lutheran, but applied for the job, and Dean was a part of the hiring committee. Leadership team. Oh, hey, leadership team. Surprise. And that's where I met you, and then you ended up being the drummer for the band, and so like we got to spend a lot of time together, and you took the leader, the church staff through a workshop. And I was like, my whole, belief system, or there was a new level of my brain unlocked to emotional intelligence. And I was like, whoa, this is all like mind blowing and like sensory overload because it's so important and awesome. And I can't remember the next steps, but I'm pretty sure I bullied you somehow to come to Green Shoe and help Green Shoe, the old company that Jake owns, and run us through a workshop because we all could learn to communicate better. And
it's a family company. So you have the company coworker aspect, and then you have the, I also have to go home to dinner with you and not want to murder you aspect.
Yeah.
So.
And then I grew up as a kid and then we're married and
Yeah. And
it was a fun experience.
It was incredible to me. I still remember it very vividly because there was just lots of things I still say to this day from that workshop that you like truly, and this isn't like stroking your ego, but like I would say you changed our marriage because you taught me about like, oh, Dave isn't actually a critical guy. He's just a thinker and he likes lists and details. He's not insulting me about, me not planning. He's just, that's just how he is. And you changed it. But like, I would love for you to maybe lay the framework if you're okay with that.
Go for it.
With what PCM is and the communication styles and.
Sure.
All the things.
Yeah. So it was I still remember that too. You know, we're when the office was in the basement.
Why are we always in basements?
Right?
Basements.
You just love basements, right?
Love
it's
them.
Hunkered down. And I remember it distinctly too. But so PCM is process communication model. And it's this fascinating to me fusion of personality and communication and the recognition that how we communicate emerges from the strongest parts of our personality. And it came out of work that Dr. Tabby Kaler was doing in the 1970s. NASA heard about it, and they said, this sounds like it could help us. So when they were building the shuttle program in the late 70s, early 80s, they brought him in and his insights to help them build better teams to deal with some of the miscommunication and frustration and chaos that they were dealing with. And they invested millions in validating and creating the foundation of what we have today with the survey and the insights of PCM. So NASA used it, and then more modern applications of it that people would experience that probably everybody watching would have experienced, and that is the work of Pixar. So Pixar Studios, they brought PCM in to help them create more authentic characters, to be able to improve their storylines, and to work better together as a team. So all that to be said is it's, as a model, a way of thinking about personality that I found to be a little bit different than we usually think about personality. So a lot of times you'll have people say like, oh, well, you know, their personality is, or I'm a, you know, so it's very like limiting, boxing, containing. And it, and those experiences that we've had can sometimes be the things that we resist wanting to be exposed to some of the personality typing, you know, what type you are. With PCM, it isn't about what type of personality you are. It's understanding that we have all of those personalities in us. And we have access. We're adaptable. We can reach all of those parts of us. But yes, some of them are going to be a lot stronger and easier for us to use. And so the model, you think about it like a six-story condominium. Each of the floors of our condominium is one of those personalities in us. If you lived in a six-story house, your top floor, you're probably not going to go there a lot, but it's still yours. And when you need the resources of what you've put on that top floor, you're going to go up and use those resources, but it takes more energy and it takes more intentionality. And so when we have people that we interact with that are maybe really strong in that type of personality that we're not so strong in, we may have a harder time understanding where they're coming from or the types of decisions that they're making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my example of that is I remember taking the course in the basement of Green Shoe, and you were talking about the different levels of personality. You had given us the, you know, our condominium, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I remember you would do impersonations of different personality types. And I remember one you were doing was the harmonizer. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's my mom. Like, it's my mom. And I could never understand. So I used to always go to her house and do her nails every 2 weeks because it was something we could go and, you know, achieve a task and, you know, get something checked off the to-do list, but while also spending time together. And every time I would go to her house, I would say, okay, here's all the colors. Pick a color, like whatever you want. She's like, oh, honey, whatever you want. I don't care. I don't have to live with it for 2 weeks. Like, you tell me what you want. It would always end up in for me, it was an argument. For her, it was like, oh no, I'm not making my daughter happy. But then you've taught us these, you know, like these communication styles. And now, like when I would go do her nails, I would say, oh man, you wear black and purple a lot. Let's do purple and like a purple party nail and then black all around. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Yes, that sounds great. And it wasn't that I was not being genuine. I was just communicating in a way that served her, I would think. And that was, I don't know, simple analogy, but
yeah.
It's a great story because it illustrates so well what we run into in our relationships all the time. And that was before that moment of you shifting your strategy with your mom. What was happening underneath the surface was probably this little bit of, I wouldn't want someone to come in and tell me what colors my nails should be. Therefore, she shouldn't expect me to tell her what her colors should be. And the reality is that experience for your mom was more about spending time together than about her nails, right?
Yeah.
It, from a personality standpoint, what are the things that I need? And that's an opportunity for connection and to be able to update each other on how life is going. And that's what it was really about. And she was looking for your perspective because she trusted your perspective on color and things like that.
Yeah.
Would a good analogy be, say, the whole mom thing, if your kid's on the sixth floor and you're yelling, hey, it's time for dinner. What? It's time for dinner. What? And then like you're both communicating. No one's actually hearing each other. And then it just gets that frustrating.
It's a great phrase, right? So just because we're saying things. So I'm going to take that. Mm-hmm. You said we're communicating, but there's not understanding. The word communication is a lot of times misunderstood because we think because I've said something that I've communicated. Mm-hmm. But we take that and say, communication is an offer. So I send something out and it's an acceptance. That's what communication is. So it means that there has to be the other person that is accepting and feeding back to me so that it takes two people for there to be communication. People say things like, I've communicated with them 5 times. They should know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Well, how so? I've sent out 5 emails, right? Well, you've distributed information. You haven't communicated. You haven't had an interaction, right, of building understanding. And so you're exactly right. What happens is, let's say as a mom, you know, dinner's ready. It's like, okay, dinner's ready. You know, it's time to wash your hands and come to the table. If my child doesn't share my same channel, mm-hmm. what I just said is not going to get me the results that I want. Some kids need me to say, okay, dinner's ready. Stop playing with your toys. Go to the bathroom, wash your hands, and sit at the table. And for you, that might feel like I wouldn't speak to my kid like that. Mm-hmm. But for the kid, if they need that channel, mm-hmm. they're going to feel like, oh, thank you for being clear with me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Like, great, dinner's ready. What am I supposed to do now?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And so when we struggle with people not responding in a crisp way, the opportunity we have is to change channels, to do something different. If we want a better result, let's do something different.
Yeah.
And so with PCM, it gives us some choices of different channels we can use.
Can you go over the six different sure. ones? Like just a brief one on, I know there's a lot to unload with all of them, but.
Yeah. So if we think of the six, I start with what are called perceptions. These are like lenses. So there's too much information around us. Even here, there's too much information to absorb it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like terabytes of information. And so our brain has to have some way of sorting things out. And so these perceptions are like filters that we use to decide what's valuable and important and what's not as valuable that we're going to let in to our perception. And so the six are in no particular order, but when we talk about them, you'll think about people in your life, right? And we'll think about ourselves. We'll think about friends and family members and people we've worked for and with. So the first one is called thought perception. And so people that are really strong in thought perception, they're going to look for information, data, facts. They're going to really value timelines, checklists, process. And the language they're going to use are going to be around very question-based. They're going to use lots of questions. They're going to ask about information. They want to understand the facts behind that. So if they need to buy a new refrigerator, they're going to go do research on repair rates and quality and value and all those things. That's going to be their process for that decision. It's going to be around information. And so right there, you can start thinking about how in a relationship that could set up a challenge. If, let's say, their spouse says, well, I want the model of refrigerator to really fit into the aesthetic of the kitchen. I don't care what brand it is. Now, all of a sudden, right? Now, all of a sudden, we're using different perceptions to make a decision and to evaluate something. And then the fight begins, you know, because it's hard for us to conceive that others wouldn't be using the same lens that we're using. Mm-hmm. Another one is called the opinion lens. So when I'm using perceptions of opinions, what I'm doing is I'm using my value system to evaluate the world, the people, the situations, the things around me. It's going to be very much about wanting to express my opinion, to share my beliefs with others, and know that the people that I'm interacting with have strong beliefs, right? That's important for me to know what you believe. Even if we don't agree, let's talk about our beliefs. Mm-hmm. Let's have a debate. Let's argue about it because I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
So for others, then they see that and it's like, they're always so opinionated. They have an opinion on everything. They always want to debate, right? So it can be repelling because we don't understand very well their perception. Mm-hmm. Third one would be the emotion, the emotive, this emotional processing. So in that environment, I'm going to process and experience more of the emotional dynamics. So maybe we go to a new restaurant and we finish our evening at the restaurant and say, oh, I love this place. Our server was so nice and the chairs were so comfortable and the music was just perfect. So it's this sensory connection. Our conversation was great. I loved the evening. Thank you so much. Because it's about how I'm experiencing it in the relationship. And the words they're going to use are going to be much more about how I feel. I care so much. I'm so happy. I feel bad. Those are the types of language that we're going to start hearing emerging from that perception. So that's three. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a fourth one would be called reflections. So it's an inaction. The action is happening inside the person. So they're reflecting on things. They're envisioning themselves. So they would be considered more of your classic, if you want to use the word introvert, but they're more internal. But there's a thousand things going on in their mind because they're reflecting on so many possibilities. And so they're quieter. They're seeking more clarity of direction. Just tell me what you want. Be clear and be direct. The fifth one would be reactions, right? So it's like reacting and responding to the situation. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about, you know, these reaction videos to music on YouTube. It's like, what are you watching? You're watching people reacting.
Yeah.
And that's actually a perception of likes and dislikes. And it's animated and it's energized. You get these facial expressions. I mean, it's a reaction. And that's a way of experiencing and sensing the world. And then the sixth one is action. And that is find the opportunity, go for it, make it happen. Let's not just talk about what we're going to do for the next 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Let's do something.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's great.
How would you say learning about all this? When did you start getting into this?
You know, it's funny. I just came across the first survey report that I ever took. And it was about 10 years ago to the day.
Oh, wow.
That I was first exposed to process communication model. And I was pretty skeptical actually going into it. I'd been around a lot of tools like this. So a consultant that was working with our leadership team brought this to the table and said, this would be really helpful. And so I'm like, okay. So I go through it and I experience it just like you did. And I thought, this is different. This explains more of the why of what's the motivation behind our decisions. What's the frustration that we're really dealing with? How do we better understand where people are coming from? And so that set me on the course of kind of diving down that rabbit hole and the work that I've done with PCM.
Because I feel like I'm feely, so we all know that by now, because I feel is like the 10th word out of my mouth all the time. But I feel like that does take it from, oh, that's just their personality, to like, oh, that's their personality because this. And it gives you that because to kind of break that barrier of, oh, that's just their personality. They just act like that. It's like, oh, no, they're acting that way because of this reason.
Well, and that's a really important point, because we want to make sure that we aren't overly simplifying people. Like, there's no two people that are the same. You know, everybody has their own experiences and hopes and desires and gifts and all of those things. And yet, there are a handful of things that we can understand about people to simplify the seemingly, you know, complexity of people, and making sure that we aren't justifying either our poor behavior on personality or creating limitations on other people of saying things like, oh, well, you know, their personality, they wouldn't be able to do that. Mm-hmm. That's a limitation type of language, rather than saying each of us have access to that entire sixth floor condominium. Mm-hmm. We can adapt, but the key is we've got to take care of ourselves and stay energized about things that are important for us so that we can adapt for others.
Yeah.
That's what I love about PCM, is because there's a lot of these, I mean, you've said it, there's a lot of different personality things out there, but a lot of people get locked into like, oh, I'm this and I can't be anything else. And, you know, oh, you know, like I'm going to explain away my poor decisions because I am this, you know, whatever number. People get really locked into it.
Yeah.
And I love PCM because it like it tells you you can access all of these personality types. But there is a different factor of if they're in distress as well.
Right?
Can you talk about
we can touch on that, right? So sometimes the thing that we don't like about somebody else isn't actually who they are. It's the fact that how they're acting is because of what's called distress. And every one of the six personalities have a type of behavior that is unhealthy, right? So each personality is awesome and amazing. And each personality has this kind of dark, unhealthy side that if we are out of energy, if we are, the phrase is, when we're in distress, what we're doing is our behavior is we're trying to get our needs met, but we're doing it in unhealthy ways, right? So we end up manipulating others around us in our effort to get our needs met. So, you know, if I'm strong in thoughts and that's my, you know, really energized floor that I have needs for, well, what I need to know is that I'm getting work done and that people can see how hard I work, right? That's important for me. And if I'm strong in opinions, I need to know that people can see that I am committed and I believe in this and that, you know, that they see this belief that I have and that I'm making a difference. Can they see that I'm making a difference? If it's about emotion, do they care about me as an individual? Like, do they remember when my birthday is? Mm-hmm. Do they remember what my favorite flower is, my favorite color? Like, do they check in on Monday and say, how are the kids doing? Or not, right? Mm-hmm. So each of them have a different need. And if I'm not getting it met in healthy ways, I do things that are maybe not so healthy. Some need solitude, the ability to just get away and recharge by myself so I can reflect. Some need some interaction, like give me a high five, let's tell a funny story, let's go have some fun together. That's recharging to me. Others just need a challenge. Give me a challenge, I'm going to go for it, make it happen. Just watch this. And so recognizing that I'm in charge of getting my needs met so that I can stay energized. But if that battery goes down, I'm going to start doing some things that maybe are going to be unhelpful or maybe destructive in the relationship.
I know for us, it was super helpful, me and my husband, because when we took the class together, we laughed because our condo stair, like a stairway, was Jacob and I were completely opposite. Like his emotional bar was like this and mine was like this. And his main bar was my smallest. So then we joked that he married his external emotional hard drive. Because sometimes I'd have to go up to him and be like, hey, the way you said that hurt their feelings. And he's like, no, I just told him what they needed to do for the day. I'm like, no, the way that came across was a little bit like this. And I know it's been helpful for us because when we get tired, my need is to like hang out, sit next to you on the couch, hold your hand. And when he's tired, his need is to have some space. So I feel like if we didn't know, like I didn't know, oh, he needs some time alone to go outside and work on the Jeep, then I could easily get my feelings hurt that, well, he's outside. He doesn't want to spend time with me. And then it becomes this weird disconnect. And I feel like this was so helpful in both, you know, we work with our spouses. So our dynamic is not just a marriage. It's a marriage and businesses for almost all of us. It's been super helpful. Like, oh no, he's not mad at me. He's not upset with me. He just needs to go. And then in the same way, he knows like, okay, I don't have time to stand here and hug you for 5 minutes, but I'm going to do it anyways because I can see that that is something that you need to recharge. And it's been so helpful.
It's a great illustration of observing the needs that others have and making sure that we recognize that I have different needs than they do. But when we don't have that awareness, what happens is we apply what we need on others. And we just automatically think like, well, I would want to get close with somebody. Mm-hmm. And if I was doing what he was doing, if I chose to go out and do work by myself, it would mean I was mad. Mm-hmm. I bet he's mad, right? So we project ourselves onto the behavior of others. Now when we can elevate the awareness of, oh, he's getting what he needs. I might even suggest, I mean, I'll take care of the kids tonight. Why don't you go out and work in the shop? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, and then come back recharged. Yeah. I'm thinking about a couple of clients from years ago, they husband and wife in New York City and very different, very different personalities. And they were struggling on some issues. And one of the big issues was the husband's main need was he needed solitude to recharge. He needed time alone. His wife's main need was contact, connection, fun, reactiveness. So you're already seeing how the plot's getting set up here, right? Mm-hmm. And she said, I get so frustrated with him. I said, okay, tell me more. She says, well, I mean, he'll just disappear and he'll go for a walk in the park without me. I mean, is it something, is he mad at me? Like what's going on? I said, yeah, great example. I said, here's the deal. What he's doing doesn't have anything to do with you. He's trying to recharge his battery. And the only way he can do that is for him going for a walk by himself so that he can be more present when he comes back to be with you.
Mm-hmm. And not even just like seeing their need and trying to fill it, because you can only fill their need if you're not depleted yourself, but being able to communicate like, I had a friend ask, well, how do you ask Jacob for help when you just don't want to or assume that he should help? And I'm like, I've only learned literally through this that if I am tired and I'm sulky, I'm like, oh, I just don't want to cook dinner. I'm just so tired. I feel like I can't. He's not picking up on it. And then I get frustrated. I have to say, hey, I'm not cooking dinner. We're eating out. Like, I can't right now. And he can understand that versus me just, okay, I guess you're not going to help me today. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be direct and tasked. And hey, I worked this hour to this hour. I'm really tired, not making dinner. And that makes sense to him versus me just being sad.
So there's so much good in what you said there. And I want to highlight a couple things. One is taking responsibility for getting our own needs met. So it's nobody else's responsibility to get our needs met, but our own. And so that can be things like, if I know that I need, if I need recognition of how hard I've worked, I can talk to a coworker, I can talk to my boss and say, I need some of your feedback on what you see from this project. Give me some perspective if you think this has gone well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can go out and I can gather those things. And so I am responsible for getting my needs met. And then the other piece of it is speaking clearly, because the risk is, let's talk about the masks, right? Yeah. So there's three different masks. When we're really in a bad place, we tend to put one of three masks on. And what you described so well is called the drooper mask, mm-hmm. right? So what happens is I put this sad mask on. Oh, it's fine. I mean, yeah, I'll get to it. It'll be okay. And someone's like, are you okay? Is there anything you need? No, it's fine. Right? So we look sad.
Yeah.
And what's going on is we're like, they'll pick up on it. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to tell that I just don't have enough energy to cook. I'm sure if he cared about me, mm-hmm. he'd be able to tell. And then he's like, oh, okay. Well, long as you're good. All right. I'm going to be out of the shop.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what a jerk.
He left. He doesn't care about me.
He doesn't care. Right? That's the drooper, and that's a way of putting a mask on that covers up what's really going on. So it's okay for us to ask for what we need, mm-hmm. right? I don't have enough energy to cook a meal. You can either get takeout or we can go out and eat. I'm just not cooking. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Oh, yeah. I love it so much. Something that I was remembering is that I quote you all the time. I didn't realize it. That is, nobody thinks about you as much as you think about you. And that has been like life-changing, I feel like, for me, because even at home, you know, right now, like, we have a little baby and Dave doesn't quite like, I mean, men and women are different. His thought pattern with Leora is different than my thought pattern. Mine's like, when is she ate last? When did she nap last? When all
it's
these
mom
things,
mode.
Mom mm-hmm. mode, seriously, it takes over. And then for a while there, cause like, you know, new baby, new adjustment, new things to communicate about.
And Dave's in like, well, I need to go hunt buffalo. Right?
He literally stepped into like, I need to make more, like, I need to be a provider. And right. like, he stepped into that and I'm like, but like, tell me how great of a mom I am. Like,
look at how nurturing
yeah.
I
yeah.
am.
Yeah. Cause I'm not a nurturing human. Right. Like, it's a weird thing that happened, you know, within motherhood. But, how has like, so you're a dad, how has that like, how has that impacted you, and what do you wish you would have known earlier? Because we're in different phases of life.
Sure.
She has
yeah.
a 4 and a 2-year-old, and I have mm-hmm. a 9-month-old. So, mm-hmm. and you have a 17?
Yeah, he's 17 now.
Yeah. yeah. I would love to hear your advice.
So, you know, I said I first encountered it 10 years ago. So my son was 6, 7 years old when I first encountered it. And that first year, I'm like, well, I've been making plenty of mistakes for 7 years is what I just realized, because his personality structure is very different than mine. And my wife's is different than mine. So in our house, we have 3 different personalities, which is not uncommon, right? We opposites attract. We find mm-hmm. things that kind of balance us out, but it's also the thing that drives us crazy about the other person. But it's harder to select your kids. And so you get that. And for me, the PCM gave me a perspective of, first and foremost, understanding what's going on in me. What's like, when I'm frustrated, what's really going on? How do I take care of myself? Because the rule is, I can't take care of anybody else if I can't take care of myself. And it's giving yourself permission that it's okay to take care of yourself.
Especially when you hit that mom mode, because it's like, everybody else is more important than me, but you can't nurture them if you're
right.
empty.
If you're dead
exactly.
inside.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to accept that it's okay to get your needs met. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's part of the relationship that we operate in. And then being able to be open with laying out expectations, being able to be clear about the needs that I have, being able to negotiate those things, and being able to negotiate in our intimate relationships, in our family relationships, in our work relationships. What is negotiation? Well, it's really just laying out, it's okay for me to lay out the things that I'm needing, and then it's okay for me to hear from you what you can and will contribute to that, right? I'm not going to make you meet my needs, but let's start somewhere about talking about what I need, and let's negotiate that, something that works for both of us. And so the biggest change for me with my son was recognizing that how he goes about doing things and the needs that he has are radically different than mine. So he is much more, like, I never understood as a little kid, like, he would sleep better following a tickle fight. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, this is so backwards. Like, you're supposed to, like, ramp down and chill out. But for him, touch and that contact is an important and useful, like, need that he has. And so his way that he went about doing things and experimenting with things and doing his homework was very different than mine. So what this helped me to do is take myself out of him and see him where he's at without the judgment of, well, he should be like me. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's our instinct is people should behave like I do. And if they don't, there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
So that's helped me. But step one is being able to take care of ourselves first. That helps us to be a better parent, bar none.
What age do you think you can really assess your kid? Because mine's almost four, and we're starting to get little nuances in him, which are interesting because they're a little bit more like mine and a little bit more opposite Jake. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to watch that dynamic, but also, I don't know. What age do you think they really come into their own?
So the theory is that the strongest part of our personality is probably there really early on as an infant. Mm-hmm. And you probably even noticed with your two kids that within months, if not weeks, you started seeing different reactions, different responses, mm-hmm. different styles. And so there's this early observation of some stronger parts of the personality that we see as present. Mm-hmm. Childhood development theory would say then, probably over the first 6 or so years, the rest of our condominium is kind of getting organized.
Okay.
And so I would say very early you can begin seeing, especially when they're in distress.
Interesting.
So when you see them at their worst, mm-hmm. you're probably seeing them trying to get their needs met.
Through their main floor.
Through their strongest part of their personality.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, it's fun to try to assess at least my four-year-old. My three-year-old, she's her own personality, but she does tend to follow, if I'm watching them separately and kind of stepping out of it, she is following more her dad's type of reactions to things. Mm. It's mm-hmm. been very fascinating. It's like case study, both of them.
Yeah, you can see it. So right now, Process Communication Model as an organization is doing study with young children. Right. That's so they've got a large study that's underway right now. And what they're doing is doing lab studies with parents and kids to gain some of those insights about that early development stage. Mm-hmm. And you can see things very early on, no mm-hmm. doubt. And so then being able to see, here's an example. So a child comes home and they've been with kids all day. And if they have a strong need for solitude, I've seen a lot of parents say things like, yeah, my kid would come home and they go to their room. And they want to be alone for 2 hours. I'm thinking, you don't want to be alone in your room for 2 hours. Let's go. Let's play. Let's have some fun. Let's mm-hmm. go for a hike. Let's do something. And the kid is just saying, I need time alone. I need to recharge mm-hmm. because I've been around kids all day.
Yeah.
And so being able to just be observant of what do they need, what do they respond to, and see them as them, separate from us. It's not easy. But this hopefully gives us a lens to be able to see some behavioral patterns and language patterns, and mm-hmm. we can try things out. And just experiment. Mm-hmm. What do they respond to?
So Carter was kind of older, or your son was older when you kind of came into this. How much did you communicate what you were learning? Like, did you just practice it and kind of just play around with it and see how how he responded to different.
I would say things? My wife and I both were learning about PCM, which was a big help. So we had a shared language, and we could do some experiments together.
Can you explain the shared language mm-hmm. thing of like?
Yeah. So I mean, when you use any tool like this, there's words that mean things. There's understandings of things, and so we would be able to observe on the same level of understanding. Like, is he reactive to something? Is he? So you can think of it like this. All of our experience of the world can be grouped into thinking, feeling, and acting, right? Everything fits into that. Mm-hmm. When you really strip it down and really simplify it, you can observe people's tendency. Do they tend to think more? Do they tend to feel more? Or do they tend to act more? And so with, let's say, kids that are more acting or, you know, more action oriented or doing oriented, mm-hmm. they tend to get categorized as hyperactive, ADD, not good in school because they're always squiggling and squirming and can't sit still. Mm-hmm. And so in our traditional school system, that style does not get treated that well. And really, you're looking at 25% of the population that would resonate with that type of strong personality. So yeah. For us, being able to just have a shared model of understanding ourselves and our son, and to be able to try out different things, respond different ways with him.
Mm-hmm. As far as communicating with someone on their level, I think I might have actually been Sarah and I talking once, your wife, that said you guys are kind of opposites too on the spectrum, but your guys' shared floor was thinking.
Right.
It's all thoughts. And Carter's shared floor was also. So in the household, that's your main
exactly.
communication. Can you explain more? Like, if your household is opposite, but everyone, like, you do end up having kind of like a familial.
We have to something. Land somewhere. Yeah. Like, you have to communicate in some way, whether it's a work team, a mm-hmm. friend group, a family. You end up over time finding, like, this is how we tend to communicate. And mm-hmm. so it's my strongest floor is thinking, and for them, their second strongest floor is thinking. And so we tend to, communicate in a very, it's called computer type language. It's mm-hmm. it's information and data and facts and question-based discussion.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we land as a family. Mm-hmm. But then each of us have our own styles. So yeah. Carter will be more reactive, like, oh, that was amazing, right? So he's going to react to things in a more energized way. And then my wife might come in and say, oh, I felt so bad for a guy at the grocery store today. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, really? Do you know him? No, but I just felt bad. You know, so we each have our own lenses of, yeah. of what we see first.
Yeah. So fascinating. I love it.
One of my favorite things is you impersonating the different personalities. You have such a gift.
Well, here's the good news. It isn't impersonating, right? It's tapping into
You're
these
right.
parts of us.
Right.
And people, and this is important to think about. Like, people think about, well, I don't want to be acting, and my intent isn't to pretend or act in relationships. I want to connect and build rapport, mm-hmm. right? And these are all parts of us that we can tap into and use in appropriate situations. Mm-hmm. So when you've got a friend that comes to you and says, oh, I just had the worst news. You have a choice. What part of my condominium is going to be most helpful in this moment? Is it, okay, well, what is it now? Lay it on me. Or is it, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm here for you. That's probably going to be more appropriate. And that's going to be a natural part of us that emerges in that moment. We all do it. We all do it, right? So, I mean, I'm intentionally, you know, tapping into different parts. But I think great actors yeah. are actually tapping into different parts of them when they take on those parts. And it isn't because they're great actors. It's because they're attuned with those authentic parts of who they are.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of, I've only seen the movie once and I'm blanking on it, but it has like it's a cartoon with all the personalities.
Oh, it's a Pixar.
Oh, Inside Out.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's based on PCM.
That's amazing. I was going to ask
okay.
that.
Yeah. I feel, okay, yeah. Yeah, that so all makes a lot of sense.
If you want to learn about PCM, you can watch Inside Out, and it really explains how we have these different parts inside of us, right? And how, for the main character, it's been a long time since I watched that movie. It was a great movie, but that main character goes through this change. If you remember the city that she had built,
yeah,
it ended up crumbling. Well, that was the description of what can happen over a period of really deep distress in our life, where we end up coming out of it feeling different. And that's described as a phase change. And so that was illustrated in that movie with the crumbling of her city and the rebuilding of a new one.
It's so cool.
Now, is it maybe it's too deep to talk about, but what would cause someone to phase? I know you've told us, but I want to... If there's a quick way to wrap it up for the audience.
It's complex and deep and you know, all those things. At the very simplest way of thinking about it is when in the study that they've done, it's about 2/3 of people at some point in their life would experience probably one significant change of phase or kind of what floor of mine is really motivating for me and satisfying. What leads to that is, at its essence, I've been stuck in a period of distress for a long time, many, many, many months. For different people, that could be different things. It could be the loss of a relationship, you know, a divorce or the death of somebody. It could be moving to a new city or a new country that became more distressing than I anticipated. It could be the loss of a job, but something that we experience that is not easy for us to resolve. It's ongoing distress, and then it turns in at the end of that, once we resolve it, we come out of it motivated by different things on the other side. And that would be a reflection people would have where they think back and say, maybe that was a change of phase because I feel like I'm interested in different things now than I was before.
Yeah.
I remember the analogy you used in class, and you said that it's like when you go back to your high school reunion or your, you know, whatever. And you're like, oh, you are not the same person I remember back in high school. Like, you're just different. It's like, that's because people phase. And I don't know. I feel like I phased at a young age. How many times do you think, I mean, obviously there's 6 levels to the condominium. How does that work? Like in a lifetime, like will people just go through all 6?
And for clarification, like the goal isn't to see how many times I can phase, right?
It's not very distressing.
How can I be in distress all the time?
2024 goals here.
Not the goal, right. But like, you know,
but,
if...
But what they found was 1% of the population of their study had gone through all of the floors.
Oh,
as
wow.
And their top floor was what they are now experiencing as their strongest, most motivating floor. So a third of people would not have it change once, right?
Wow. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's incredible. What would you say, like, is personality connected to, like, burnout?
Well, we hear about this, especially the last few years, people describing themselves as being burned out, right? And
I was there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was personality related.
It can be lots of things, right? So things that can contribute to that is maybe I have a change of what I have in priorities in my life, period. Mm-hmm. Other things have happened. Like maybe I have a child and all of a sudden the things that I thought I valued are now in a different context, right? Those things happen. But
samesies.
Yeah, there you go. Right? So there's our priorities, the things that we value will evolve over our life. What I find people describing about, especially work burnout, is if I'm asked to do repeatedly in my role work that forces me to use a part of me that's not really strong, you know, 80-90% of my day, every day, I have to use a part of me, a part of my personality that I'm not comfortable with, that I don't have a lot of energy for. When I lose energy, I return back to that floor of my condominium. And that floor might not have the resources, the skills, the tools, the appetite for what my job is asking me to do. So I think of burnout as the mismatch between the demands of the role and the joy of me, you know, mm-hmm. my skills, my energy. And so the more I'm asked to adapt without getting positive feedback, positive loops in that, I believe the quicker people are going to describe that as burnout.
Mm-hmm. People are going to love this.
Yeah. To even bring it to like a current position with me and my company, I own a hair salon, do hair for a living, love it. Love coming in, shampooing someone's hair, giving them a great head massage so they feel super relaxed. And then styling their hair, and they always leave, and they're like, I feel so great.
I feel beautiful.
And that, like, makes my soul happy. But the first time I have to step into that boss role mm. of, like, oh, the trash is full, ask someone to take it out, it takes a lot, because that's my smallest level. It takes a lot of running up six flights mm. of stairs for me to be able to say, please take out the trash. Yeah. It's so interesting.
So think about doing that for 6 hours a day.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be awful. I could never, mm-hmm. I don't think I could ever be like in a supervisory role without some form of like relief from like the caring for people aspect. Mm. It's been interesting to watch it in myself and business. So have you noticed a lot of differences in, with all the companies you've worked for, because you've worked for corporate and everything, something in my role where it's more like a caring business versus something that's more corporate? How does that differentiate?
Yeah. So, you know, as you described yourself being very strong in that emotion kind mm-hmm. of lens, mm-hmm. What you find is, so I don't want to look at personality as constraints of what people are able to do, mm-hmm. but you do see patterns of what people pursue, right? What we logically pursue. So if we look at the statistics, you know, so we can get into the whole like sexism, you know, in the world, yeah. you could say, right? We can go down that path. But if we just look at the statistics, like 45% of women's strongest personality is going to be emotion-based, okay? 40% of men, their strongest floor is going to be thought, information, data-based. And so it's apparent to me that you're going to see more, let's say, women that have that empathetic, emotional tendency mm-hmm. to go towards roles that are going to provide more opportunity for that. Mm-hmm. Being an elementary teacher, being a stylist, helping people yeah. feel beautiful, mm-hmm. being in hospitality, welcoming them to our hotel or to our restaurant, helping people that are struggling. Like though, it's like, I'm going to do more of the things that I feel rewarded and that I can use my gifts in.
Mm-hmm. Is it from a business perspective, to kind of flip it away from relationships, do you think that people should hire based on their main traits, or do you think that you should hire everyone and then kind of work and wiggle them where they need to be? What's your thoughts on as far as like hiring for certain roles? Because you don't want to box someone in, well, you're right. never going to be able to work the front desk because you don't have that
right.
feeling personality, but they may be great at it because they're organized and to the point maybe you don't need that emotion at the desk.
Right.
It's an interesting.
Well, it is an important thing. And if we think about using assessments for a minute about mm-hmm. hiring selection.
Because yeah, I think you had to go through this kind of to get hired on at the church, right? Or was it a separate? Or did you take it just
I think it was after
later?
I was okay. hired.
Yeah.
But I did have to do it to get hired at an agriculture company.
Yeah. yeah. So most companies now, and I say like, you know, more than half, I don't know what the stats are, but mm-hmm. a lot of companies are going to use some sort of what's called a psychometric tool, right? Mm-hmm. Some measurement of people, whether those tools are validated and helpful and they're using them appropriately, that's another question. The main thing is that, you know, by my recommendation and by law, shouldn't weight more than a third of the decision, right? So you can use mm-hmm. it to inform how I use the tools that I use when it comes to hiring is mm-hmm. first and foremost, making sure that the hiring manager or the company understands what does success look like in this role? Like, can we describe
that? That's
a good
question. Yeah.
Can we describe the purpose of this role, what success looks like in this role, the types of activities this role is going to be responsible mm-hmm. for doing on a regular basis, the hurdles that are going to be present in this role? If I do that well, and we're able to have good, candid conversations in the interview process, mm-hmm. those things should emerge on their own, mm-hmm. right? The individual should be able to see that and say, ooh, maybe that's not the best fit
yeah.
for me, mm-hmm. right? So let's have those kinds of conversations rather than, being overly limiting and saying, oh, well, I got your assessment, and I don't think you're going to be able to do this role.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's just have a better conversation about what success looks like.
Which would go back to communicating correctly.
Right.
This is what we expect for this role versus saying, well, I don't know. I kind of want you to do this. I kind of want you to do this. Yeah. And then both parties get frustrated
right.
in the long term.
Yeah. Man, I love this.
Yeah.
I think people will love it too. Cause I mean, we're in the world where people are obsessed with Enneagram, but like it's really kind of coming to light all the kind of toxic things that are wrapped around it. Mm-hmm. But this is like an effective tool to be able to like not only implement within your business, but also at home and with your friends and to be able to communicate more clearly. What would you say is like your number one, not number one, but like a piece of advice you would give like a business who's struggling with this? Like, would you say, how would you help guide them?
Yeah. So whether it's a little business or a big business, I start with the leader. So when we think about what's wrapped in your question is really kind of organizational health of a team or of a business. And I believe that begins with the leader. So you're not going to have a system, whether it's a family, a church, a company, a volunteer, nonprofit, they're not going to be healthier in their communication and their emotional dynamics than whoever is the leader. So as the leader goes, so goes the system. That's where it begins. And so I'm very reluctant when leaders come and say, these people need to change. And so my question is, okay, how much are you willing to change? Mm-hmm. Because all of that is connected to you. These don't live separately. Mm. And so that's the work to be done, begins with the leader. And I've seen that over and over, that when that leader is committed and sincere about the work that they can do, it radiates in healthy ways through the organization.
Mm-hmm. You have such a gift for this.
Yeah.
Like it's very cool. And you have a real talent for it. And like, I know it's in French, but you have a book coming out.
Parlez-vous français?
I do not speak French, but I do know what you said.
Me neither.
Où se trouve la banque? Where's the bank? No? That's all I remember from French.
We've tapped out our extent of knowing French.
Do you know anything?
The only thing I know is one, two, un, deux, trois, and I only know that from the Mary-Kate and Ashley movie where they were doing, you remember the one where they're doing like a burger and she had to eat escargot? And that's Mary-Kate and Ashley movies, my only
there you go.
Knowledge of that. So
yeah, I just know how to ask where the bank is.
Yes.
Yeah. I used to know how to ask like, where are my suitcases, but I've lost it. It's not there anymore. So, but you have a book that's dropping. Would you like
the English version?
The English version. Yeah. Yes. Unless you speak French, then
it's, already
then it's all yours.
It.
Go download it.
Yeah, there is a French version, but for most of the watchers, it's going to be in English.
Yes.
So it's coming out here and it's called How We Connect. And it's about introducing people to the principles, like these foundational pieces of PCM. So PCM is so rich. We've like scratched the surface.
I know. You know, I want to go deeper. Right? Like I so badly.
Right.
Yep.
But you're so busy. You're so popular.
I want like, all of us to go through it again.
I do.
Because it's been, what, 7 years? 6 years?
It was when, like, it was the first year Dave and I got married. So it was 6 years ago.
Yeah. I would
That's
love
cool.
to go through it again just to kind of see where everyone's at and get like a checkup.
That'd so the English version, How We Connect, is coming out here shortly. And what it's designed to do is, whether somebody is new to PCM and just want to understand the basics, or even for people that are trained trainers, it's a reference tool for them to kind of come back to the basics. Mm-hmm. And it's following a journey of six different personality structured people, right? So six different people that are going through this training experience, and they're able to react and respond and ask questions through that. So that's what the book's designed to do, is to introduce the pieces to people. So really excited about it. It's one of the, it's the first book that has a comprehensive glossary, because we have a lot of terms in PCM. And so this is a place where everybody can come back and say, what does this word mean in this world? It's in there. And it's been a great journey of growth. So they say the best way to learn something is to teach it. Right. And so this is forced kind of back to basics and wrestling with a lot of questions of what's going on in us and in those moments of interaction. And so it's been quite a journey.
Could you tell me how it was writing a book? Like how did it feel? How'd it go?
It's kind of for, so one of my great friends, my co-author, and he's one of my mentors and certifying trainer in PCM. He lives in Paris. And so that's the French connection, if you will. Yeah. We wrote it in English with an ocean between us. So it was written on Zoom, basically.
Wow.
And so that was a great opportunity for us to learn and grow and build that relationship. It took way longer than we thought. So we're proud of where we've gotten to. But it was kind of like wandering out in the country with a flashlight. Like you're just kind of searching around. You can't see everything, but you're hoping that you can see the things you need. And then things begin to get more lit up, I think, as the sun begins to rise. And so we're really happy with where That's we've awesome. Gotten.
I can't wait to read it. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to read it. Yeah. Is there anything you would like to touch on before we close?
No, I mean, if anybody wants to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn, so they can search for Dean Hefta on LinkedIn. My business website is clarusresults.com, clarusresults.com. So I'm happy to answer any questions people have. Like, I love talking about this, as you can tell, and this is a great opportunity for me to share some of these stories, so I really appreciate coming on.
We're glad to have you.
We'll put all his information in the description, but people can work with you. Reach out to his website or on LinkedIn. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes.
And like, we want to have you back on like after it releases and after we get a chance to read it.
Yeah.
So that we can.
That'd be great.
We can.
You can I'll get like, my hey, highlight. On no. page 72.
No, seriously, here. I'll have my highlighter. That's be like, right. Okay, here we go. Let's look into
Let's
this.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Because it has been life-changing for me. I know it sounds like really lame, but it unlocked a level of my brain at that time in my life that I was like, oh, just because I'm this annoying way doesn't mean like that's actually like a distress or whatever it was. It's been very helpful, and I'm really grateful you're in our life.
Yeah. Thank you're you for really having
awesome.
Me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Woo! Podcast!
Thanks for being with us today. Follow us on Instagram at @underthesun_podcast. We'd love to meet you.
Please help us out by subscribing on YouTube and leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time. Please remember this information is made available to you for informational and educational purposes only. It is in no way a substitute for medical advice.